Okay. Thank you. Okay, we are reconvening from closed session, and we'll have a report out.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's session, councilmen in closed session, discuss four separate matters, all four matters. As to all four matters, no action was taken as required in reporting it to the ground.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. We'll now move to public comment on matters not on the agenda. I have three speaker slips.
Can we start before we start this?
So we have to formally start the meeting at the roll call and flag salute?
Oh, okay. We do that twice.
Yeah, this is the regular meeting.
Okay, all right. Apologies.
No problem.
Okay, so, call the roll and roll call, please.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Vice President Joe Citizen?
Here.
And President Barney?
Here. All right, please join us in the flag salute.
Ready, pledge. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have an agenda review. Are there any comments from directors on the agenda?
Nothing from me.
No.
No.
Okay, hearing none, we will, thank you. We will move to public comment on matters. We got the report from closed session, public comment on matters not on the agenda. And I have four speaker slips, starting with Deborah Early.
Hi, Deborah Early. Some of you may know, but I have spent a lot of time starting to look at Central Coast Blue and really thinking about what that means for the community and, you know, how we need to, you know, think about it and some of the impacts. And last night at VACO, we had a similar discussion where we really requested as a VACO to start some public outreach. It has not been sufficient from a you know, Q&A and a meaningful approach in accordance with SB 1000. So really recommending that both from a VACO perspective and also from an OCSD perspective that we also have some public outreach, kind of for different purposes though. I think for VACO, it's for land use. For OCSD, it's for understanding the arrangement with OCSD, any conflicts of interest, water rights, and those types of things. So I request the board that we, you know, think about those two separate dates, but maybe the mailer that goes out can actually highlight both of them together, ideally, so that we can get some interest around the events. And then I did want to just comment just real quickly just on conflicts of interest and encourage the board. I think you were in executive session to really think about those conflicts of interest, particularly as we think about water rights. It is something that I am pretty worried about from, you know, being able to think about Oceana's water rights and looking at what I'm seeing in some of the proposals. So again, thank you and appreciate your attention and also hopefully look forward to some public outreach.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker is Victor Early.
Hi, Victor Early. Thank you, board. And just to follow on what Deborah was talking about, if we do have a public session with CCB, I'd like to have it as technical as possible. So requesting the technical people from the CCB side to be there to answer questions. I've been asking them a lot of questions, and some of them have been answered, some of them haven't. One of the questions I have is if they run this injection system, are they going to run it continuously in wet periods and dry periods or not? So I'm worried about the water levels in Oceano. So
if they run the thing
during wet periods when the water table is high is going to be different than if they run it during a drought. So those types of questions I want to have addressed. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Early. Next speaker is Pamela.
Hi, I'm happy to be here today. Thank you for your time. I just wanted to follow up on Deborah's request. If you do the mail-outs and the public meeting, the community sees it. They have not been informed at all. Went to a CCB meeting on Monday night, and I had a folder for Oceano on some of my questions and some of my concerns. And I went to hand it to the board. They said, we don't represent Oceano. They're not our concern, basically. You need to give that to Supervisor Paulding. So CCB has no obligation ethically or legally to Oceano. That's very concerning, because I believe they should have. The other thing is, can Oceano take the logos off the CCB website if you are not included here? Very confusing to clients. I am a real estate broker. I had somebody call me today and ask me questions on this from Chicago on three lots I have listed in Oceano. And they were confused about OCSD, CCB, and they're searching the websites. And both the OCSD logo and the South County SAN logo are on the websites. But you guys aren't included, or Oceano is not included. Thank you for your time, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Ms. Thornton. Our next and final speaker slip that I have is from Daniel Chung.
Thank you, Mr. President, directors. Good evening. Again, it's good to be with you again today. I'm here again as a member of the public, but also as your former legal counsel, to respectfully request that you direct staff to add our conflict advisory to your next agenda and that the board approve it as presented. So I'll just get straight to the concern that we have. I understand that the district has questions and concerns about the CCB project. So the challenge is that Rule 1.9 of the Rules of Professional Conduct determine what actually constitutes a legal conflict of interest. And I read it to you earlier. What it states is that a lawyer who has formerly represented a client in a matter shall not thereafter represent another person in the same or a substantially related matter in which that person's interests are materially adverse to the interests of the former client unless the former client gives informed written consent. I'll share again that questions or disagreement alone, or even that there might be a dispute in the future, does not constitute a legal conflict. If that were the case, it would be very difficult for any public entity in the community or the state to ever find non-conflicted legal counsel, especially one who knows the stakeholders and the community well. So I shared with you earlier, and I'll reiterate again, you know firsthand how conscientious that we've been in our provision of legal services to you. That's the same commitment that we make to you in requesting the conflict that you review and approve the conflict advisory. We sent that to the district for two reasons. First, we want to be transparent with you about and affirm our commitment and obligation to you as a former client. If there's a material change, as the letter states, we will seek a separate waiver or we will recommend appointment of conflict counsel. Second, we also want to be transparent with your constituents and the public. There may be concerns about a perceived conflict, and we want to reiterate our commitment and obligations to the district as they're outlined in the letter and in the law. We are not asking you to waive any rights through the conflict letter that we sent you. CCB will somehow obtain legal counsel, whether it's us or another law firm. And then finally, I believe that having someone who understands and respects the community of Oceano can only inure to the community's benefit. And so again, we respectfully ask that you review and approve at your next meeting the conflict letter that we sent to your legal counsel and general manager. Thank you so much, and again, available for any questions if you have them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chung. Any other speakers on public comment?
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker. There seems to be a theme here tonight, and I think it's important that we do discuss Central Coast Blue in a very large context, and it's been a long time coming, as I've been to this podium many times, inviting you to enjoy the impacts that Pismo Beach is going to foist upon you. Central Coast Blue will impact the water basin that you share. It will impact the county roads that you drive on in Oceano. It will impact this district's utilities. There will be conflicts in the ground with your water lines, your sewer lines, their water lines, their discharge lines. That puts your staff to work. Sure, they'll pay you, but that means it's taking them away from doing work that they need to do for you. It will impact traffic. There will be road closures. There will be people who have to leave their homes for several weeks due to the noise and lights of drilling a well 24/7. I've actually had that happen. I had a municipal well built next to my property, and we were put up in a hotel until the job was complete, displacing people from their homes. You have wetlands. The project is not set back from the wetlands. You have had liquefaction in your community. In 2003, the San Simeon earthquake shook a home off its foundation. That home is gone, and that lot is still for sale. It's a stone's throw from IW3, where they want to put a well next to Old Wands in the street there on Monroe. These impacts and more need to be discussed in a public forum that Oceano specifically pays attention to, because you are not a partner in the project, but you will be affected by it. As for the conflict of interest, I don't know how there couldn't be a conflict of interest. Mr. Chase Martin was your legal counsel from 2012-2013 in that era. Mr. Minnery then was your legal counsel for the last 10 years. Then Chase Martin back again, all the while handling your efforts at Northern City.
Is there any response from staff to any public comments?
Just that I did do a quick web search, and I did see our logo on the Central Coast Blue website as a
cooperating stakeholder.
So we'll follow up with them about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Director
Austin?
So at last night's meeting at VACO, we discussed this. The Earlys and Pamela were there and asked about a public forum. So Supervisor Paulding was there, and he agreed that he thought VACO OCSD and him could arrange to have, like, it would be an open public forum and invite all the, you know, Central Coast Blue and everything, do it. Not in one of our meetings, but in a special meeting type situation, either do it here or, you know, somewhere we'd accommodate, and then really get a large outreach to the community to let them know. So is there something we can get going?
I received correspondence from Jeff English today, of a similar manner in terms of trying to figure out how to coordinate a meeting, including Supervisor Paulding.
Okay.
It was kind of short, but it was a email that seemed to me to express the intent of, you know, doing so. So I'll be following up with him.
And then with Supervisor Paulding also.
He was also referenced in the email. I have not, you know, talked to Supervisor Paulding or had any emails with him.
I'll let him know.
But on behalf of Central Coast Blue, it would seem like they also agree that community discussion would be appropriate.
And as to the logo, I remember a long time ago, they said, we asked about it, we didn't want it on there, and they said it was to help them get grants using our disadvantaged community status, I think. So I think it would be wise to take it off of there.
Are there any other directors have any comments? Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to special presentations and reports, beginning with our South County Sheriff Station Commander, Ian Dowdy. Commander Dowdy.
Good evening, directors. To speak of for South Station, for our Oceano stats, for this last month of January, we had 353 calls for service. As referenced the prior year, we had 379. In January, we had 10 calls for assault or battery, six of those being domestic violence, 17 calls for disturbance, two residential burglary calls, five theft calls, one being a grand theft and the other being petty thefts, one call of vandalism, 32 calls that assist other agency, which could be fire or CHP or state parks or any other agency, eight suspicious circumstances, seven of those being subjects, one being a vehicle, 73 enforcement stops, which would be vehicle or pedestrian stops, and 20 arrests were conducted. Mm-hmm. I have nothing else, but I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Any questions from the board?
No.
What was the grand theft?
That, I don't know the specifics of that.
Okay.
I can get it.
That's okay. I'm just curious.
Any questions from members of the audience? All right. Seeing none. Thank you, Commander, for your presence tonight. I think you can get back to your regular duty.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Yeah. You too. Five Cities Fire Operations. We don't have a report from this anymore, and we're working on that. Our Operations and Utility System Manager, Mr. Maricino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino, Utility Systems Manager, and happy Valentine's Day to all. So Lopez is currently at 100.3% full, and it is 49,545 acre feet, and it is still currently spilling. We had one sewer system overflow from a private lateral out to clean out that I reported in January. We're still taking state water, which January was delivered just over 42 acre feet. No Lopez water currently, and we did not pump other than the sample, which was under an acre foot. We are continuing to take weekly and monthly samples. We had 13 work orders, 11 USAs, 10 customer service calls, three after hours callouts. One was for an unlock on Fountain. And we started having power surges Friday, which our lift station went down during regular hours. And it also two other callouts at the lift station Friday night and Saturday night for power problems. First of the month equipment runs. We had to repair the chlorine shed at Well 8, including replacing the door due to the weather and just the age of it. First part of the year, dead end flushing is complete at all our dead ends on the water mains. We had the some jetter repairs. We had to weld a few brackets back on that broke. We replaced the belt on the motor and some electrical work done to it with the switch that remote controls the vacuum. We locked out, tagged out tank one prior to any work being done, so nobody operates the valves and the electrical there. We're still picking up trash, and we had three 311 tickets for January. We vacuumed out the sediment and the standing water in tank one so they could get in there, hopefully, and get the floor of it x-rayed here shortly. We started our fog inspection on all the restaurants. We completed that except for one location that we have to get it when it's open. It's It's open Friday through Sunday. We'll take care of that this Friday. We had a service line on 17th Street that needed to be completely replaced due to the age of it. Completed that. Replaced two 4-inch water meters at the booster station with other smaller meters throughout the system. And we just ended up replacing an air vac today on Tierra Nueva, and we finally got to pick up our service truck that we were guaranteed back in 2018 when our general manager was the GM. So we got to pick it up. It's right outside if you want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Once the meeting's over, it's out there.
Okay.
And that'll be in service in a couple weeks once we get it tooled up. Got to do a few other things, rhino-line the bed, get the tools situated in the parts, and when we show up to a location, we won't have to go back and forth for anything.
Wonderful.
So, any questions?
Yeah, how many flogs do you do in total?
Total flogs, off the top of my head, I might not be correct, there's about 16 to 18 throughout Oceana.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Look, why are we taking state water and not using Lopez right now?
I will give you a better answer. We got an email in with the county right now because it is spilling since the 8th or 9th.
Okay.
So
I'm just curious. Yeah.
This report is for January deliveries.
Okay.
So
great.
I'll give you that information the meeting of next month.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our general manager, Mr. Ogren.
Yes. For my general manager report tonight, I've prepared a PowerPoint presentation to cover the leadership conference that we all attended. But before I get into that, I did not include my bullet points on the general manager work efforts for the last three weeks. But the handout is there. And, you know, in general, my work efforts are pretty consistent in terms of the big picture efforts associated with the recruitment of the permanent general manager, working on the fire divestiture issue, NCMA and state water issues, including addressing, I've started my review of the EIR for CCB, board meeting agendas and current issues. And then those current issues also include the most immediate or current issues on capital improvements. And I think that during my tenure here with Oceano, prior to the new permanent general manager coming on board, those are still going to continue to be my primary work efforts. Mm-hmm. Then turning to the PowerPoint, I thought it was great that last week all five board members, myself and Carrie Cassiola, our business and accounting manager, had the opportunity to attend the CSDA Leadership Academy conference, and it was fortunate that it was Embassy Suites here on the Central Coast. One of the reasons, there's two primary reasons to do a brief PowerPoint presentation. One is I do think it's a good idea to make sure that the public is aware of the efforts that your board is taking, in particular in 2024, of setting a new direction for the district. We know that there were some challenges in 2023, and I think that the conference itself talked about the fact that the challenges that existed here are simply not uncommon, and it's not just special districts, it's also cities and county boards of supervisors. We saw several videos of some of the other governing boards in action, and it's hard to imagine how some of them have been able to set new paths, but certainly it's nice to see that your board is already setting the new path in 2024, and I think that the public should be pleased. I also think that it's important for us to develop some video clips so that the applicants for the permanent general manager position can see those video clips and the efforts that are being undertaken by the district and your board specifically to set a new direction in 2024. Those video clips can also help with the recruitment efforts, because the better then that applicants can understand Oceana CSD in developing their resumes and competing for the position. It's always good for an employer to do that kind of outreach. And also then this and some of the subsequent presentations prior to that, the interviews, can shed some light for applicants on the types of questions that might be asked for the asked during the interviews, with the bottom line being is that what applicant is really going to be have the traits to best meet the needs of Oceana. The conference sessions themselves, there was five of them, building a foundation for good governance, defining board and staff roles and responsibilities, and sometimes in larger agencies, those are very much the board is policy oriented, staff carries out, but we know that in smaller special districts, that those roles and responsibilities have to have some flexibility. Fulfilling your district's mission and charting the course, that's really talking about strategic planning, goals and objectives and work plans, and so I have a slide on each one of these. The fourth session, and each of these was about a half day session, is best practices for communication and outreach, both in when things are going well and when things aren't going so well. And we have an example of that I'll bring up later. And then the fifth session was always that exciting number crunching about what do board members need to know about district finances. So I'm building a good foundation, building a foundation for good governance. These are just some of my takeaways, and I think that you know, everybody who attends a conference like this has different types of takeaways. The nice thing is we all got the big old manual here, and I think that it's good reference material, and it's also going to again be good material for recruiting the permanent general manager and seeing the traits and qualities of those individuals. So there's just a few takeaways I had from building a foundation for good governance. And governance teams succeed with what they call unity of purpose. And what does that mean and what does it not mean? It doesn't mean that elected officials agree on everything. On the big picture, yes, agreement. What's good for the, you know, we're all working on behalf of the public and for the community. And so by starting with the big picture, developing unity on the board of why we're here and what we're doing is to serve the community. It almost sounds like unity of purpose is something akin to a mission statement in a strategic plan. But unity of purpose is really about the individuals and board members recognizing that at the 30,000 foot level, you're all here for the same reason, and that is for the benefit of the community. It also talks, the training talked about discussion and dialogue versus debate and demeaning statements, because when we get into specific issues, it's a common that elected officials have different points of view. That's where we have the discussions about what are the pros and cons of different points of view. And the important point is the board as a whole makes the decision and provides the direction. And to me, this was is also consistent with the code of civility and the lead that Supervisor Paulding had talked to your board about in late 2023. It's about being diplomatic. And I also like to think about recognizing that on specific topics, sometimes there's multiple valid points of view. It's not that one person's point of view is valid and the other person's point of view is invalid. It's that we get into the dialogues and the deliberations because there's often multiple valid points of view, but they don't always line up. And again, that's when the governing board has to weigh those views and set district direction. The conference spoke a little bit about directors' individual attitudes and approach affects their effectiveness, and that comes right out of the manual. Those aren't my words, but again, I think I spoke to the idea of multiple valid points of view. And then the last on building a foundation for good governance was the reviewing the board responsibilities, and the bottom line, it's hiring the GM, evaluating the GM, and instituting effective governance. So again, quick summary of of 4 hours of discussion on building a foundation for good governance. The second session was defining board and staff roles and responsibility, and that's where the conference got into a lot more details, both do's and don'ts, the roles of the board, the general manager and staff. And some of our more recent discussions here specifically for Oceano is about the committees and how is it that we effectively use our committees in order to work with staff on some of the details in order to improve the effectiveness and the efficiency of decision-making at the board level. I also think that part of the reason why Oceano at this point in time in history can turn attention to a differing model of using the committees is because in contrast to 10 years ago when I started with the district, there were so many things that just weren't working right that we had to focus on basic business operations and get those together. But today we have strong staff. We have strong staff on the administrative side in the office. We've got strong staff in the field. We're addressing issues just light and day better than 10 years ago. And that then gives the board the opportunity then to set a new direction since some of those basic foundations have already been taken care of. I see it, and I was talking to Carrie earlier today, at the committee levels, the more that we as staff can help to gain the board members who are on committees the detailed understanding of different issues, the better it promotes the continuity of the district. If there's a change in the general manager position or through the finance and budget committee, God forbid that there was a change at the business and accounting manager position. But we don't, at a small district, have the same type of backup that larger agencies have. And so if we lose a critical staff member, it's really the board and the committees that can help fulfill those transitions. The board's role in human resources was discussed. Positive and red flag indicators, one of them being, as an example, how is staff turnover? Because if a district has a lot of turnover from, prior to 2014, the district had 7 general managers in 7 years. That was certainly a big red flag at that point in time that something wasn't working. Discuss confidentiality and legal liabilities, and how can board members affect the work environment. And I think that's a good point, too. It came back to me because even when committee members or your board member shows up in the office, that's where staff spends, quite a substantial time of every week. And just getting the highs and the hellos and the courteous treatment between each other is important. I remember earlier in my career when a lot of the harassment training issues were first being introduced into the workplace. What happened is that, the harassment is one thing, but then we had the examples of two employees crossing the hallway where one employee says hi and the other one rolls their eyes and just, says grumpy or something like that. And today that's not even between employees, it's not acceptable behavior because it can be discourteous treatment of other employees. And so board members and committees, it is very important for staff that when you're in the office and we're it was brought up in the conference, and it's an issue that I think is just important for all of us to remember. And then communications between the board and the staff, and we have formal communications during these board meetings. There's always the general manager who wants all communications to staff to go through the general manager. I've never been that way, and I don't really think that it's a good way to facilitate overall communications, but it is important to have an understanding of when specific issues come up that we have a general understanding of how we're communicating with each other, and it promotes overall teamwork. So these are a number of the topics that were discussed at the conference in that particular session. And it really points to the power of communication. Because when I got here, one of the things that was an immediate observation, or I should say during the interview process, was that in 2023, communication had broken down. And the ability to reestablish communications and make sure that they're going good is a cornerstone to good governance. There's been more than one meeting that I've had with individual board meetings that I've gone into going worrying myself about how am I going to speak to a particular topic. And maybe it's the sense of sometimes we plan for the worst and we hope for the best. But the bottom line, every time I've had a worry in my mind about meeting with any of you since I've started, they've just been worries in my own mind. Every single meeting has gone well. I think it's important for me to prep in a manner that anticipates that this could be a difficult or a critical conversation. But I want to reemphasize that the actual results of those conversations and the conduct of those conversations has always been positive. And I, you know, again, want to sort of emphasize the power of not just communications, but positive communications. So the last two sessions, the fourth one was on fulfilling your district's mission and charting the course. And this is really about strategic planning. And we're going to have, I'm going to be seeking from your board some direction on strategic planning at an upcoming meeting. And the point of making recommendations is, how do we initiate some strategic planning even before the hiring of the permanent general manager in order to prepare for the hiring of the general manager while recognizing that the new permanent general manager has really got to have be participating in the strategic planning because that new general manager's primary responsibility is to take your board's direction from the strategic planning and to make sure that it's implemented, including goals, objectives, priorities, and work plans. And of course, within all of those goals, objectives, priorities, and work plans, there's timing. And so it's really the new general manager who's going to have to work with your board to address the commitments and the timing of meeting different goals and objectives. And a lot of people, and including myself, have been involved in strategic planning in the past. And one of the good points that I thought came out of the conference is that it is important to discuss the approach to strategic planning. In some strategic planning efforts, there's lots of bells and whistles associated with mission statements and vision statements and maybe what I would characterize as being more of the softer, fluffy language. I tend to want to focus in on priorities and work plans. That's just the way that I am. But I think that how your board wants to approach the strategic planning, we really want to be able to set that direction prior to the hiring of the new permanent general manager so that we can do a video clip and the applicants can see how your board wants to approach strategic planning. And obviously looking forward to hiring a permanent general manager to play a critical role in there. So approach, you know, board leadership, staff, and utilizing, what's the role of staff and utilizing a facilitator or not? I tend to, in this situation, like the idea of utilizing a facilitator because then the permanent general manager can be a participant in those efforts as opposed to facilitating them. And then, of course, very importantly is, how do we engage in public involvement in those strategic planning efforts? So I thought it was the timing was great to talk about strategic planning and charting the course for the district's future. And then the final one was get the word out, best practices for communication and outreach, because we all do a lot of work. We tend to focus on what do I need to get done right now, but we can't lose sight of the fact that everything we're doing is really for the community. And so what are some of the best practices? And certainly public expectations and distrust of government are at a high level. It seems like throughout the course of my career, those distrust of government, it keeps going up higher and higher. And so what do we do in order to build trust within the community? And responsibility, authority, and accountability are three of the themes that they discussed at the conference. Different reasons to communicate. Maybe we're trying to implement the capital improvement program, something that is going to provide community benefits through increased, you know, flows or pressures in the water system. But sometimes they can be because something went wrong, and we need to communicate that with the community too. Community engagement itself, start early, have a plan, develop a communication plan, and use narrative storylines. Sometimes we do have to get into the technical issues. Mr. Early had talked about he's hoping that at a community workshop, there's plenty of technical issues to be addressed. Sometimes that loses a lot of people in the public, and so incorporating a storyline, and when we do have technical issues to discuss, how do those technical issues work into the big picture and the storyline of what's going on? And then prepare for crisis communication planning. The example that they we used at the conference was a press release had gone out for a boil water order because some coliform tests proved positive. The basic regulation is if you have one positive, you have to go back and you have to test a second time. Tony and I sat down and looked at our crisis communication planning and outreach. In the conference, the example sort of led you down a road because it said staff failed to inform the board members of the first positive coliform. And then it hit the press, and the board members still didn't know about it. And it's all over the board, and people are calling board members, right? Well, the reality is the first coliform test kicks us into a procedure, and it's to test upstream and test the distribution system in different areas to see if there is a second coliform. Our communication plan doesn't have us reporting to your board if there's a first coliform. We have drafts of the press releases. We have the whole list of everybody who we have to notify, and if there's a second coliform. So if there's a first coliform, we go into that action plan, we prep for communications. Thankfully, in Oceano here, we haven't had a second positive that would result in a boil water order, at least not in recent history. But we do have a communication plan. It's got some features that need to be updated. But all the outreach to the regulatory communities, the phone numbers for KSBY and the different media so we can get the press releases out, and informing your board that we have a boil water order that is coming down. So again, in the conference, they seem to imply that informing the board members with the first test was important, but I don't know if that was just a test of us. In any case, the real action, so Tony and the operators have a lot of work to do if we have a positive coliform, but it's the second one that really kicks in the public, the boil water orders, and we do have the draft press releases and whatnot. And then the last one on best practices for community and outreach is advocacy for your district, which means, you know, reaching out to whether it's the county or individuals who are in the state assembly or the state senate, and with that, oh, I did miss one. I don't know why. As a CPA, I never want to talk about money anymore. But the fourth one, or the fifth session, was technical and more technical details on budgets, revenues, expenditures, receipts, financial statements and audits and investment reports. And what I find with some of these technical accounting reports is that some people follow them pretty well. Most people get a little bit glassy-eyed when it comes to, and so I turn to the right column on key indicators. What is it in those different documents that identify red flags? Like our basic one is the operating budget and a deficit. Do our operating revenues cover our operating expenditures? One of the key ratios is called a coverage ratio, where you divide your operating revenues by your operating expenses. And the general standard is you should be at about 125%. Because that extra 25% provides the money for capital improvements and dealing with deferred maintenance. But what kind of financial ratios and even some of the non-financial indicators that point to financial health for the district. For example, right now we know that the sewer fund is operating at a slight deficit, but we also have $1.2 million in reserves, which means that we have the ability to plan both capital improvements, and at $10 a month for our sewer costs, that's really quite inexpensive, our charges on sewer right now. But because it has healthy reserves, we know that we're in a good position to be able to address what the needs of the sewer system are, or the collection system in the future are. Risk management was also discussed, but I think that the creation that, you know, we're going to talk a little bit as one of the agenda items later on the Finance and Budget Committee, that's where I would envision the Finance and Budget Committee addressing things like some of these key indicators and financial ratios, and really how do we boil down the budgets or the financial statements and the investment reports into just some of the key indicators that are easily understood. Because if some of those aren't looking good, then that tells us that we have to dig deeper into the numbers and figure out where we're going to go. Overall, I thought it was a great conference. I thought the timing was really good considering where the district is at. And I was super happy to see all five board members there. I think it demonstrates a good commitment to the future of the district. And apparently Senator Laird was also very pleased that everybody was there, because in addition to getting the little conference certificate, Senator Laird provided some resolutions for all the board members. And it's nice to see that he's tracking his staff that tracks with the different districts and the different jurisdictions within his territory are doing. And so that's my summary.
Thank you very much. The final staff report from our legal counsel, Mr. Schultz, do you have any information to share?
Just as my general duties, going over the agenda with staff, and I did reject the claim for the sidewalk trip and fall this week, and other duties researching the CCB and the conflict of interest.
Okay. Thank you so much. Next, we'll move to Board of Directors and outside committee reports. We'll lead off with Vice President Joyce Sunnison.
Okay, we had to move the OPARC meeting to the 13th because we were all at the conference during our regular meeting. So we developed a conceptual agreement between, well, we're developing a conceptual agreement between OCSD, LUCMR, and Habitat for Humanity to move forward on the partners for the walking and running track that's being built on the field of Oceano Elementary School. And we're trying to work out the details of the roles and responsibilities of each group. OCSD is trying to investigate how to set up a 501c3 nonprofit to manage any fundraisers, and we're in the process of developing a design for the track, which would include site placement and relations to other activities on the field, such as basketball and soccer. We're trying to plan for the OCSD to have a town meeting and community engagement to explain the goals of and the function of the Recreation Department. And how to manage some fundraisers. We're identifying large private donors, grant opportunities, and county funds. We're organizing a fundraiser kickoff, an and I believe this was Director Austin who came up with this idea, to host a county kickoff fundraiser at the Oceano Depot and coordinate with media coverage and promotions. And that's, and we did have a full house for our, all of the members of the board of the OPARC committee showed up. We had representative from the community as well as OCSD, Lucia Mar PTA, and Lucia Mar School District itself, and the Boys and Girls Club. And that's, any questions or discussion?
I'd like to make a quick suggestion, if that's sure. Okay. While the walking track plan is being developed, I was thinking that OPARC could sponsor and hold some smaller events, like, because I like sewing, I was thinking of a month-long sewing class for beginners on Saturdays. And I think that idea could attract all ages, boys and girls. I know a lot of boys sew now. And basically to teach the basics of using a sewing machine and or hand sewing. And I think it could be very inexpensive because we can ask friends that quilt or whatever for fabric donations. And then find seamstress volunteers to teach and bring their own sewing machines to use during the class. And we also could include knitting or crocheting, any kind of handwork.
Thank you. I think that's an excellent idea.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay. Director Austin?
Report on the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. We had our meeting last Wednesday. We arrived in Grover Beach right after the tornado. We had no power in the Grover City Hall, but the emergency generator came on, so we conducted our meeting, and chainsaws were roaring in the background, and it's quite busy right in that area. So the we did our yearly rotation, so I'll be the chair, and Grover Beach Mayor Bright is the vice chair, and Mayor Karen Ray Russum is the director. We did our bylaw review, and there were no changes. So our report on the secondary clarifier update on the repairs is Kennedy Jinks, their design plans call for the removal, replacement, and anchoring of the floor, in addition to replacing the floor slab with a thicker section. Micro pile anchors will be used to further protect against hydrostatic uplift. And Kennedy Jinks has submitted their final construction plans for the repair. The project team and the district's third-party structural engineer completed a final review, and Philance is preparing costs and a schedule for the repair. So in the meantime, they removed all the mechanical equipment in the secondary clarifier, and they're preparing for the concrete demolition of the floor. And the staff attended a storm coordination meeting with the County Office of Emergency Services and the National Weather Service for this. I think we're has to have some storms this weekend and for the last storm we had. So they're right on top of monitoring all the weather. The last storm, we had no power outages. Everything's running very well. The APCD, on January 24th, the Air Pollution Control District performed their annual inspection site walk of the district's treatment facility. There were no findings or violations of the district's APCD permit during the annual inspection site walk. The district is adhering to its APCD permit as required. Let's see. No violations of the discharge permit. Everything's running smoothly, and I sent an email to Administrator Gint and passed your concerns about the
the Coastal Commission, you know, permit expiring in 2047 and what's being done. So he's preparing a report for us, and I'll get it back. I was hoping to have it tonight, but he didn't get it ready, but we'll have it soon. I'll send it in an email, and then we'll have it at the meeting next time. That's all.
Thank you very much, Director Austin.
You're welcome.
Do they have an end date on the reporter of the redundancy?
There, I think it's around in June, they're hoping. So.
That seems fairly fast.
The good thing is all the contractor and the Kennedy Jinx, everybody is working together very, very well to get it taken care of. So it's been a very smooth, although it's not a fun thing, but everything's moving forward in a positive way to get the repair finished. Okay, that's my report.
Thank you.
Your turn, Director Gibson.
And I have nothing to report.
Okay. Director Villa.
I did not attend any committee assignments, but I would like to add on to Pavel's, our manager's report on the conference there, and I'm glad that we all could make it. I found it very worthwhile, and I really loved the part of the conference where they emphasized good governance by going from a me approach to a we approach, uniting around a purpose, and in order for us to work more effectively as a team and get along and continue with, you know, getting business accomplished. And I also really liked the emphasis on the audit report with the financials of, like, making sure our board understands the importance of going over it, you know, in detail before our meeting, asking all the questions in order that we are prepared for our meeting so that it, you know, it's, we come across as like pointing out what we think is, what is wrong with, you know, if there's anything wrong with the finances, and if not, for to assure the public that everything is, all the financial reports are fine and we're governing the district the way we should. So I thought that was very something that I wish I would have known before. It's very useful, especially when it comes to transparency. Thank you.
I don't have any formal report tonight, but I'll piggyback on Director Villa's appreciation of the conference, and it was great for all of us to be there together, hearing the same information and being able to hang out with each other at breaks and during meals. So it was a very worthwhile experience. We'll take public comment on special presentations and reports.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker, and there was another question asked at the last meeting of Director Austin to ask Mr. Gent, and it was about the groundwater and the potential for groundwater rise due to the Central Coast Blue project.
I did ask him that, and he's going to get back with me on that too.
Okay.
I did.
Can I finish, and then you?
Sure.
Thanks. That, you know, there is slated to be one well in phase one on that property, and then phase two, should that ever happen, there's a second well to go there to inject more water where it's already wet. Doesn't make sense, never has to me. But your report on the secondary clarifier is always interesting to me, and I'm curious if because of the pressure from the groundwater on the new facility, has there been any kind of reconnaissance run on the rest of the facility and the other equipment that's out there to see if some of the concrete in the other, not just the new stuff,
right,
and the old stuff, if there's some compromise? Again, let me just finish, Linda, and then I'll go away.
Trend in.
And then on Pavo's report, sure, when you were talking about the finances and the sewer rates and the reserve, I recall that in your last budget that was approved in June, that there was a recommendation to have a rate increase in the sewer fund this year. So I'd like to know if you are contradicting that recommendation at this time, or postponing it, or what exactly there. And then I took very much to heart your discussion about respectful behavior between staff, board, and how, what a shitty year you had in 2023. You did not have a respectful general manager, of the fact that three of you were seated by the community, and that he was roadblock at every turn. And my personal experience with him was also disrespectful. And that is so wrong for a general manager, and I watch a lot of them, and that's how they lose their job. It also is how they lose respect in the community, and that's what happened. Your board lost respect from the community because he was the face of the district. So I'm glad you had this lesson, and I'm sure you're reflecting on it similarly.
Thank you. Additional public comment? We'll do the answers when public comment is concluded. Thank you.
Thank you. April Dury, Oceana resident, and I just want to say what a breath of fresh air to hear Mr. Ogren talk about what you guys experienced at the seminar, what you learned, the vast, basically 180 difference of what that is compared to what we've all experienced here over the last several years, but especially last year. And again, the concept of staff and respect and harassment and the illusion, even the illusion of harassment, and to think back to when staff mandated and the director, the GM, facilitated a meeting with the then president of the board, that's so out of line. That should have never happened, and I hope that as Paavo puts these things into place for you, that that you guys take the power for yourselves and the next general manager and put these expectations in place and utilize them and not let that person wag the district. You guys are the power, and don't give it away again or let it be taken away. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Director Austin,
I just wanted to respond. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I will get all those answers from Administrator Gint.
Thank you so much. Mr. Ogren, did you have a comment?
Yeah, you know, with regard to a goal of having a rate increase this year for the sewer operations, I have not had the opportunity to dig into some of the details. I'm not surprised that that goal is there. I think the likelihood of really doing it this fiscal year is very low, just because of the transitions in the general manager position and with different priorities that we're working on right now. The reality is that the need for a rate increase this fiscal year isn't that pressing. What I think is needs to help to build it in discussing with our business and accounting manager is to develop also some estimates associated with the deferred maintenance and the capital project work associated with the collection system, so that when the board is considering a rate increase, then it's all things are considered. But again, I think it's unlikely that it would happen this fiscal year, and that does not, I think, is just simply not a reason for concern, given the overall health of the balance sheet and the reserves. And I think what's more important is that as the district moves forward, to make sure it's done in a proper manner, including addressing deferred maintenance, as similar to what has been done for the water system. But of course, the water system being a higher priority, just because of the extent of the deferred maintenance and the cost associated with the water system. So follow the same approach. We can be diligent about it. I just don't think that it'll happen this year.
Thank you. Any other comments? from directors? Okay.
No.
Seeing none, then thank you very much. We will move to the consent agenda. And I will recognize our business manager, Ms. Cassiola.
Thank you, President Varney, members of the board. I had a question from President Varney on page 4. He had a question about our utility systems manager report about the trash cleanup behind the card room. If it was inside the card room or behind it, it was behind it. It was reported to us as illegal dumping. So that was taken care of by our utility staff. And that was behind it, not inside the card room. And then I also had a second question. Page 21, it's part of the 8D, the submittal of the district's fiscal year 2023 quarter two investment report. He asked what the trustee for, it's about 24,000. So that is a non-negotiable certificate of deposit that's in the water fund. It's kind of similar to our public facilities fees where it's restricted. And committed already. So those are restricted funds. And then also the $300,000 that hasn't been reinvested yet, I received a recommendation from Optum Investment or Partner, no, Investment Partners. And I have a recommendation to purchase 6-month Treasury bonds in this upcoming quarter. Okay. And are there any other questions from me or? Or not at this time.
I had a question. On the check to Adamski, the law firm, is that our last payment to them?
Yes, that's for the services rendering in December 2023.
Okay, great, thanks.
Okay, we'll take public comment on items on the consent agenda.
Good evening. I'm going to start with things that I think the board would understand, and then I'm going to get into a little more financial technical stuff that hopefully you will listen to, and if the powers that be that would know the answers don't answer them, then maybe you could go find the answers as the board, because I think they're important to know. The first thing I wanted to ask or bring to notice is, you know, the last meeting or so, you guys implemented this sign-up sheet for your presence, so you get paid. It's awesome. I'm confused as to why Ms. Gibson didn't do it when she was in attendance, and if she's in her largesse giving this back to the district or not wanting it, that's wonderful. Thank you. But could we note that so that at the end of June we don't get a notice that says, I attended 7 meetings and I want this money? Can we in some way note that on these documents so that they're noted? Thank you so much.
I think that's my business.
I'm talking in public comment.
Please.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Can wait till the end.
Thank you. Then there is a disbursement to what's called the Franchise Tax Board, and I'm confused as to why we're paying the Franchise Tax Board. It's a tiny little amount. The amount isn't the issue, but the Franchise Tax Board has nothing to do with payroll, and you're not an entity that pays any kind of income tax. You're, you know, a government agency. And when I looked up the chart of accounts reason for it, it was very vague. It was other something or others. It was so vague as to I don't know why. So I think that the board should understand, where is your money going? Why are we paying the Franchise Tax Board? That's a question I have. And then for transparency's sake, we're writing a check for $2,880 to the school that says grant money out, right? I think for transparency's sake, it would be helpful that when there are disbursements out, that there is some reconciliation provided in the board packet that says, this is the money we've received to date. This is, you know, the funds that are sitting there, and this is what we're paying right now, leaving us a balance. Because I don't know that you got money. Our income are never in our financials that we get in the board packets, right? The money coming in, we never know. So I think for transparency, it would be better, especially when it's OPARC and the issues are surrounding that. So if we could just say, we received a $3,000 grant on this date, and we're paying out $2,880 on this date, leaving a balance up. And again, the chart of accounts number is so vague. It's under other appropriations. I don't know what that means. And quite honestly, and that's not even an account number on your chart of accounts. So I have that question also.
Thank you. Other public comment? Yes.
Really quick on the Adamski payment for the last month. And I find that interesting just because I'm a dates girl. I don't know why things, dates stick in my head. Adamski resigned from Oceano in October, October 13th, I believe. That resignation was effective December 31st, right? They were your legal counsel for the remainder of 2023. Mm-hmm. They sent a proposal to Central Coast Blue, I'm pretty sure it was November 12th. In that proposal, they spoke about the clients that they've had as part of their, you know, their work effort and their experience, et cetera. And they name Oceano CSD and they bracket it in parentheses saying former client while you were still their client. They're telling Central Coast Blue you're a former client. And then in whatever it was last week, this next Friday will be 2 weeks ago that they asked you for a conflict waiver. They have been working for you in other conflict of interest rules. I follow the Fair Political Practices Commission. You have to wait a year. Lawyers, maybe there's something different, but I do still believe they have a conflict of interest. And they didn't do you any favors this last year. I have heartburn, I'm sure you'd still do too.
Thank you. Any further public comment? Seeing none, we'll close public comment on this item. I think that we had one director wanted to comment.
I already said it. Okay. It's my business, and okay. I'm not going to write anything on okay. the sign-in sheet.
President Barney, would you like me to answer the other questions?
Yes.
Thank you. All right. So the FTB payment was a withholding order we received for an employee, so that was paid by the employee, so that's why the GL code is actually to a liability, so that's why that goes to the payroll, goes through payroll. Okay. Then the second question was the payment to the school is for the California Parks Grant. That reconciliation would be shown in the quarter two budget review with the expenses and the income that we'll see that we've received since and what we project out. So that would be gone over with OPARC at our, no, excuse me, not OPARC, but OFAB, Oceano Finance and Budget Committee. At our first meeting, OFAB. Okay. And then the next question, yes, I think that was all. FTB, when income's shown, and the reconciliation on how much we spent on the California grant. So those are the three I had. Any others?
If I might also follow up, you
yes,
know, the suggestion that we have some sort of a reconciliation between the amount that was awarded, like in this case, the grant, versus how much is paid and how much is remaining. We do have those reconciliations. They exist on all the consultant contracts. They exist on all the capital project contracts. It's part of, I know when I'm reviewing payments or recommending for approval, payments, I'm always looking for that sheet that shows how much was authorized, how much is previously paid, and how much is remaining after the current payment. So those are the kinds of details that are available for review, but just typically don't get into agenda materials themselves.
I just want the payment to the school, is that a payment for the bus trips?
So that $2,800 was budgeted for subsidizing the fingerprinting of parents so that they can be chaperones on field trips. The fee is $75. For some families, that's kind of a stretch. And so we budgeted for that in the grant, and the parents want to sign up. So Carrie worked diligently to kind of speed that up and get it over there. And Mr. Herrera, the principal, was pleased as punch. And I won't belabor it. We're tending to focus on first, second, and third grade parents, so that, because your fingerprinting lasts you for the whole, time your kid's in school. So we're kind of doing a little human development investment there to get a cadre of chaperones at Oceano Elementary School.
The reason I ask is this morning when I was taking my little grandniece to school, she's in first grade here, and she says, we get to go on a field trip in 8 days. We're going to the aquarium, so I thought, well, maybe this is for that field trip, so I think that's cool.
Well, this is for the maybe her grandmother to get fingerprinted to go with her.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Are you going to pass?
We'll see. Statute of limitations. Okay.
So I think that we have pretty much concluded the presentation and discussion on this. We'll look for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
So moved.
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Ms. Cassiola, please.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Vice President Joyce Sennison?
Yes.
And President Varney?
Yes. Okay, moving on to business items. We'll take public comment at the conclusion of each of these separate presentations on A and B. Mr. Ogren, would you please lead us into it?
Yes. On agenda item number 9-8, there's two action items that are recommended: a resolution approving the Budget and Finance Committee bylaws, including duties, governing policies and procedures, and committee membership. And second, an ordinance amending Ordinance 2006-1 to provide committee review of financial appeals. And so on the first one, the resolution, I'll quickly note that we have some typographicals that we will fix because we go OFAB FAB. And it should just be OFAB. And what it does is it provides for the Finance and Budget Committee to review a number of the different financial related reports that are generated for the district prior to coming to the board as a whole, including the annual preliminary and final budgets, quarterly budget updates, proposed budget adjustments, researching grants, meeting with public and private, basically doing some of the research, the annual audit, investment policy, and then reviewing customer appeals on service charges, connection charges, and other fiscal matters, and adopting findings for the board's consideration. And that last one then lends into the ordinance modifications. In 2006-1, which is essentially the district's rules and regulations, the provision that's in here that's redlined to modify, simply rather than an appealant going straight to your board, first goes to the Finance and Budget Committee. And if they're not pleased then with the decision of the Budget and Finance Committee, then they can appeal it to your board as a whole. That's simply to propose some efficiencies and also the ability to really address the details associated with an appeal on a financial matter. So we needed to modify that ordinance in order to do so. One of the examples that we have right now is a customer has a current dispute on a bill, but because they hadn't paid the late fees, then late fees were charged on top of late fees. And I made the executive decision that during the appeal period, we will not add late fees to late fees, but still it's an issue that needs to be addressed by the Finance and Budget Committee. Another one that's out there that's going to be addressed in the near future is a payment associated with a customer who's concerned they had a leak, and so the ability, the district has provisions to make adjustments when a non-detectable leak has been identified. Most recently, the individual had a plumber out, and they did not find a leak, so we're going to have to address their appeal if they still want to appeal it at finance and budget. But the ordinance modification was necessary in order to provide with the finance and budget with the ability to address the appeals prior to your board as a whole. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I'll go to the board first.
I don't have any.
Then we'll open it for public comment. Okay. Seeing none, call the question. Look for motion.
Is this called the resolution 9A? So I'll make the motion
Yes, 9A.
That we consider the resolution approving the Budget and Finance Committee bylaws, duties, governing policies and procedures, committee membership, and two, an ordinance amending ordinance 2006-01 to provide committee review of financial appeals.
My second.
Thank you both. Ms. Cassiola?
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Vice President Joyce Sonneson?
Yes.
And President Varney?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Ogren. Now, item 9B.
President Varney, members of the board, 9B is a discussion and consideration of a resolution to revise the fiscal year 2023-24 plan of payment and compensation salary schedule for the general manager position. And the existing salary schedule just has two amounts in it, so what's recommended and as discussed at your prior meeting is to provide more options essentially at the lower end of the range. At the prior meeting, I had provided an exhibit that showed a five-step, and then forgetting some of the details of my past employment, Carrie and I went back and looked at our payment and compensation plan, and there's actually eight steps, and so we've revised the lower steps. The eighth step is not applicable because that's more of a longevity pay for over 10 years. It's specifically addressed in the union contracts. And of course, your general manager position is a contract employee. So after 10 years, if you have a general manager, it tends to be that their lifespan doesn't last 10 years. But in the event that it does, then of course, you would be addressing that as part of the contract. And so we also added some additional information. The Pomo CSD had recently done a survey. And so we added that to the materials. That was a result of some of the public suggestions at your last meeting. But I think, again, the salary range is appropriate for your board to look at the applicants. I think it's very highly unlikely that I would recommend hiring at the high end, but you never know. You could get an applicant. One of the things that I think is important in the recruitment materials for the new general manager is to recognize that your last two general managers were department heads at the county level and kind of make sure the expectations are set that if individuals don't come in highly qualified, then the recommendation isn't going to be at the high level. But again, maximum flexibility for your board to be able to select the candidate who you think best meets the needs of the district, hire them at the appropriate salary range, and most likely provide them for upward mobility based on success.
Okay. Thank you. Directors, any comments or questions?
No, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Fine. All right. I would just like to express appreciation to Mr. Ogren for the responsiveness of the information you put together, two comments that were brought up at the last meeting and some questions about other districts and stuff, and your respectful response to that. So appreciate that. We'll take public comment on item 9B.
Julie Tacker. I want to thank you, Mr. Ogren, for adjusting the salary schedule down and take a little issue with this page 39 of 40 where it talks about the different agencies. I like seeing those all together, and you said Napomo put that together. I think that's what you said. The information about Los Osos is incorrect. The asterisk says total Los Osos population is 14,465. The LOCSD serves population 7,086. That is not true. Los Osos CSD serves all 14,465 people in the urban reserve line. Their water service is only 7,086 people. That makes them a little bit comparable to Oceano as far as just for water service. And they, while they have the power of sewer, they do not use it. The County of San Luis Obispo manages our wastewater in Los Osos. So those were just some little things. And I'm very glad to see that you do not have Cayucas in here anymore, and that the Atascadero Mutual, those two big salaries that you saw last time were kind of anomalies, and they have some justification behind them, none which makes any sense. But I hope your board is successful in finding someone at the low level to work their way up. And my recollection from something I learned when I was a board member was that the average general manager of a community services district's tenure was like a year and a half. That's pretty bad. And in Los Osos, we went through 16 in 16 years. 16 in 16 years. Wow. Yeah.
I fired
some. Thank you. Any further public comment? Any further comment from the board or staff?
I will make sure to take responsibility for the errors that are in the survey, but give acknowledgments to Nicole Miller and Carrie for putting the additional correct information together.
Thank you. Okay. So we're looking for a motion to approve item 9B.
I move that we approve item 9B.
I second.
It's been moved and seconded.
Vice President Joyce Sennison?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
And President Varney?
Yes. Moving on, we have no received written communications. We have no late received written communications. Do directors have any items for future agenda?
No.
No.
Okay. Future hearing items?
No.
Anything? This is maybe a little premature, but we will have a, will our presentation by SLOCOG on the 13th, Mr. Ogren, do we call that a future, that's not particularly a hearing item, is it?
No, it's not a hearing item. It certainly could fall under future agenda items. And I think, you know, my note is that yes, on the 13th, both individuals from SLOCOG have agreed to coordinate their presentations. So that was good news. In fact, the response I got from them is that they were very pleased to be able to do
so.
Great. And then in working with you, President Varney, I've started to sort of map out presentations and board business items for future meetings, especially those that I think are going to be during my tenure as the interim general manager, so that we can plot out when we're going to be talking about various issues, whether it's state water or when the divestiture is going to get back on your board's agenda. And so I think maybe by the next meeting we might be able to start identifying some of those dates.
All right. So it sounds like over the next few months we probably won't be canceling any meetings for lack of agenda items.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I like the idea also of the presentation calendar, trying to get a presentation at each board meeting. And if it's from somebody outside the district, great. And if there's not somebody from outside the district, then we might have a presentation from district staff on an aspect of our operations. Okay. We have to do an update to the sewer system management plan, or no, the biannual audit of the sewer system management plan. So that's one of the, is that real? Because every 5 years we have to update the plan, mm-hmm. and then biannually we have to do an internal audit of the SSMP. So that's okay. one that I think would be a presentation as opposed to an action item, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it'll be on the board's agenda, but there'll be a presentation as well.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. In closed session, Mr. Schultz, we anticipate closed session at our next meeting?
I'm sure there will be.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have on a couple of the water litigation will be on again on the fire divestiture issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Then, if there's no opposition, we'll take a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. Thank you, everybody.